We are back once again. It is March 26th. The semester, it's coming to a close. Almost there. We're almost there. Just keep on pushing. Sports world finally reheating up again. It felt like we cooled down to a lull. I'm your host, Nathan Pagliaroli, alongside Owen Mack. Oh, Mack, how are you feeling today?
I'm doing good. Yeah, it's good to see MLB back in full swing now with the first game underway last night and, you know, a full slate of games today. So looking forward to that. And, you know, NHL season slowly coming to a close. It's going to be a tight race here in the Eastern Conference. So yeah, excited to dive deeper into those topics today, too.
Yeah, it feels like for the first time in a while, there really isn't no Laurier Sports. So they're giving me the green light just to go talk professional sports. We got some MLB slated. We got some NHL slated. So why not dive right on into it. Last night, the Yankees played the Giants 7-2. Oh, not 7-2. 7-0 Yankees. As what I thought was going to be a surprisingly good Giants lineup just fell short against Max Fried and the Yankees. So what did you see from yesterday if you caught any of that game, Owen?
Yeah, no, I definitely caught a little bit of the highlights of that game, but Max Fried was just, you know, he was him old self, right? You know, we've seen Max Fried last year a bit have times, you know, with keeping the ball in the ballpark and, you know, inconsistencies and stuff, but, you know, he was able to have his curveball working full flight and getting a lot of swings and misses from those Giants hitters, and yeah, he just kind of had the game plan and was getting a lot of whiffs, and, you know, Max Fried, you know, when he's on himself, can be definitely one of the more, you know, accomplished pitchers in this game, and, you know, is trying to prove themselves as a clear-cut ace for the Yankees for this coming year.
Yeah, Max Fried, he needs to pick it up. He's Gerrit Cole. He's on the 15-day AL. He starts, so that's way ahead of schedule than what everyone would have thought. So he might be back as soon as possible, maybe April, maybe they wait till May. But technically, when you come back off that Tommy John surgery, you're not going to be back in, you know, throwing those six, maybe eight-inning long games. It's going to be maybe strict pitch limit for at least the first five starts, then he's going to ramp back into it. So Max Fried, he has to be that guy on that staff for at least the first half of the season to carry the Yankees in what should be a super competitive AL East.
For sure. Yeah, I know we'll see the AL East, you know, very competitive this year. You know, the Red Sox got better in the offseason, right? You know, with the acquisitions that they made and, you know, as well the Baltimore Orioles too. You know, they're going to look for a bounce back here, right? Because it was only 2 years ago that they won 100 games and won the AL East. And so I think we can see from the Jays too this year. You know, everyone's thinking, you know, that we lost Bo Bichette and lost a couple of our other pitchers, but, you know, bringing up Kaz this year and yeah, you know, getting some more pitching depth. I think it's gonna be a really competitive division again this year. So really, really hard to predict. And, you know, still don't count out those Rays. Like, no matter how many trades they make, they always seem to be, you know, kind of in the mix. Yeah. So I think we can see another competitive year for the AL East upcoming.
Yeah, just to speak to the AL East, I feel like this year, more than any other year, you can't really point to one weak spot in the division. Sure, you can point to teams like the Jays, I can even say the Red Sox. Those teams are maybe a slight edge. But I think this is not going to come down to who's the best team overall. Who's the team that we see as the best talent, the most high-end paid players, highest paid players. It's going to come down to who has the most depth. Who is the longevity, 162 games. Who's going to stay healthiest the longest? And that's where a team like, I think, the Rays could come in and surprise people. I don't think they're going to win the division. They're, once again, they play in a little league ballpark. It's the Rays. They don't have that guy. But I still think their pitching staff's pretty good. They have Drew Rasmussen. They have some guys coming back off IL. They have a good pitching factory. Never going to go against that Rays pitching factory. And once again, I could see a team like the Rays. Never count the Orioles. And once again, you always got the Yankees, Red Sox, Jays. It's going to be uber competitive. I could see all teams have a winning record by the end of the season.
Always, yeah, no, for sure. And that's one thing, you know, it's kind of we call the Kevin Cash masterclass, right? He's been the manager now out there for, it seems like 10 or 12 years, right? And every single year he's been able to use his pitchers and, you know, use his what he's given effectively. And, you know, being the Rays are a bit of a smaller market, they've had to trade away some of their marquee players over the past couple of years. And in the offseason, they had to get rid of Brandon Lau, you know, one of their mainstays in the infield for the past, you know, 7-8 years. So, yeah, I think, you know, with the good pitching depth they have there, and, you know, they still have some pretty solid hitters on the team, such as Taylor Wells, or Wells, sorry, and, you know, Wander Franco, he's way gone, but Yonder Diaz and, you know, some of the young players coming up. So, yeah, I think we can expect a really competitive year, and, yeah, as you were saying, there's really no one team that, you know, is, like, the clear-cut favorite to win the division.
Yeah, there's maybe slight favorites, but just, like, to make a prediction now, you can never make a prediction this early in the season. And I don't know if you're keeping up with the scores today. Some major news out of Pittsburgh. Paul Skeens got chased 2/3 of an inning. You just don't see that from him. And all of a sudden, the season's starting a little bit. Logan Webb chased last night. Paul Skeens chased today. Is it live ball error back? Maybe we're seeing some live ball error, or just maybe that WBC, those are two WBC Team USA pitchers. Has that taken an effect on them early on in the season?
You got to think, too, about that, right? You know, especially, the WBC is essentially the Olympics, right? And so, you know, when you're competing for your country, you know, those pitchers take it seriously, and they were, you know, kind of going all out. And you know, now to bring it back, from kind of what they had in the World Baseball Classic, now, you know, apply that same kind of mentality, you know, in the season and stuff. And yeah, you know, you think maybe there's a bit of a slight overworking and stuff, because, you know, both two of those pitchers, you know, were definitely played a big role for Team USA in making it to the finals there. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see, because, you know, maybe this year, you know, with the whole like ABS challenge system and, possibly like live ball error could be coming back. But yeah, no, definitely really, really on so far. But just surprising to see, right? You know, pitchers like Logan Webb and Paul Skeens, you know, arguably, you know, top five pitchers in NL and probably all of baseball getting hooked that early for Skeens. And Logan Webb just, you know, struggling last night to, you know, usually be his himself in terms of, you know, getting those swings and misses. But he was just pretty much every Yankees hitter last night, except for their best hitter, Judge, you know, they were able to solve him.
Yeah, speaking of Judge, that was not his night. You can talk about, is that carrier from the WBC, because he was not good in the WBC. Seemed like he might have found something in spring training later on, but four strikeouts, and they were ugly. It's one of them first one, he just gets sorted. He's absolutely sorted on a beautiful sinker from Logan Webb. And Logan Webb, it seemed like every batter in that Yankees lineup figured him out, except for Aaron Judge. And then he strikes out, looking, swinging, looking again. Then he grounds out. That's his best at-bat of the game when he grounds out on the first pitch. And that's not what he wants to see. Granted, these are overreactions because it's the first game of the season. But that this is a completely different Yankees team if they're going to play like that, because last year their downfall was they can only hit home runs. They didn't hit a home run, and they scored 7 runs without Aaron Judge. And if they continue to play like that, they're going to be scary.
For sure. Yeah, I know we kind of were talking about this earlier, right? But as well from like last year, you know, it was interesting to see Buck Martinez's comments, you know, about the Yankees and stuff, and, you know, how they're only relying on that long ball. But, you know, they're always known as the Bronx Bombers. But, you know, if they can rely on that secondary offense, you know, aside from those big bats, especially Aaron Judge, you know, is arguably the best hitter in the whole league aside from Shohei Ohtani, right? And so, you know, if you can have the pitching depth, and, you know, if you can have the Yankees improve their defense and improve their overall mental mistakes on the base paths, which they should be able to, because, you know, they have a fair amount of veteran players on their team. So yeah, I mean, obviously, as you were saying, it's only one game so far, but, you know, if you can get those other contributions aside from the long ball, you know, and then I'm sure it's only a matter of time before the long ball will sort of come into effect for the Yankees. And so yeah, that's the, you know, every year the Yankees are a team that you want to watch out for, it seems like. You know, ever since I've been kind of watching baseball, they're one of the more storied franchises in history, right? So there's never really a weak spot that they have, or, you know, never really like a really, really down year for them. So yeah, definitely gotta watch out for those Yankees.
You always gotta watch out for the Yankees, but a lot of pundits are saying it's the Jays. And what do you think about this? It's the team in Toronto coming back off a absolute heartbreaker, Game 7 World Series. And they're coming back, and they made some moves. They lost some players. Bo Bichette, Met. So I almost forgot about that until I was attuned into the Mets game today, and Bo Bichette has a sacrifice fly, and almost an error at third. But we don't talk about that. And then you bring Kazuo Okamoto, and the pitching staff looks good right now. It's kind of banged up. You got your Savage on IL, 15-day IL. Maybe it's a contract thing for future. Then you have Shane Bieber. He's been dealing with something coming off Tommy John last year. Has, I believe, was oblique strains. And it's going to start off with a bit of a short rotation. You got Max Scherzer being plugged in there. Cody Ponce is being plugged in there now. Jose Berríos is hurt still. And you kind of got to survive this first half of the season. You kind of got to see the bats you got. I think Addison Barger is one guy you're going to have to look at. And we saw flashes, especially early on in the season and late in the season, especially in the playoffs. He was the guy where you can go to, hey, he's your secondary power option outside of Guerrero. Now that you lose Bichette, he is now the secondary power guy in the lineup. I want to expect him to take a huge step forward. Hopefully, Springer doesn't fall off the face of the earth because of age. And if you can get contributions from Ernie Clement, Alejandro Kirk. If Okamoto can be that player, he doesn't be phenomenal. He has to just be, once again, another secondary power hitter in the lineup. The Jays could be scary.
For sure, right? Yeah, I know. And a lot of people were, you know, kind of really mad about the fact that Bobochet's leaving. Obviously, you know, spent his whole career, came up through the Jays system with Vladdy. You know, they were known to be the 1-2 duo. And yeah, you know, but after a while, it kind of seemed that it was definitely more likely that, you know, Bichette, in terms of trying to negotiate a contract and not really being able to return. But yeah, you know, the Jays were able to go out and, you know, bolster their bullpen a bit with, you know, getting the likes of Cody Ponce, who's not going to be in the starting rotation, bringing back Eric Lauer, getting Dylan Cease. Those are really good moves. And, you know, we talked about last year in the Jays in terms of their unsung heroes, right? And so if they can build off that last year, you know, a lot of teams that, you know, come off a World Series, you know that they're that close, but especially the Jays, they were that close, right, last year, right? And so I think that's going to really light a fire in their soul. And, you know, they still have the same, you know, core players as they did last year, for the most part, obviously, with the exceptions of, you know, Bassett and Bichette and some of those players. But, you know, a lot of those guys know that they're that close, and they're ultra motivated, you know, to get right back there and, you know, come out with a different result this time. As we know, there's going to be a lot of other powerhouses this year. The Dodgers are likely favorites again, you know, with the additions of Edwin Diaz and Kyle Tucker. But yeah, I think the Rays are still going to be a very scary team, and definitely a good shot for them to win the AL East again this year with their depth, because it seems like the Jays really have no weak spots this year in terms of their defense, pitching, and their hitting.
Yeah, they really don't have that weak spot. Like, you can speak to last year and a few years ago. What was the desperation? What was the weakness of the Jays? It was always depth hitting. And you finally have where I can look at 1-9. This is a good hitting team. This is a team that can play defense. Like, I don't feel like you don't see errors with the Jays. Like, you go around watching the league, you're going to see errors. You just don't see that with the Blue Jays. They are defensively sound. This might be the best pitching staff the Jays have assembled in maybe their entire history. Like, these are guys that are Cy Young candidates. Gausman, Cease, who else? Even guys like Max Scherzer. He's older, yes. Will he pitch the entire season? I highly doubt it. He's probably going to maybe pitch April, May, once some guys come back, go to the bullpen, which I'm not against. And you have even guys like Andrés Giménez, elite defensively. He's like the current day for the Jays, Troy Tulowitzki, I find. He's going to play shortstop elite. He's going to play second base at an elite level. And you know what? He's not as bad as a hitter as the media makes him out to be. He's pretty competent. You saw him in the playoffs, especially against that series against Seattle. He's a competent hitter. And if the Jays can just play to that expectation and even exceed the expectations for each individual player, this is easily a 90-95 win team that's going to make a deep playoff run. But he spoke to the Dodgers. Who's going to beat the Dodgers? I said before yesterday's game, hey, I kind of like this Giants lineup. I like that they have Logan Webb. I like their pitching staff. I love Tony Vitello, their manager. Well, they got blown up yesterday, but it's all right. I think Luis Arraez is good in that lineup. I think Matt Chapman shouldn't be hitting too, but he's still a competent player that can play elite defense. But those are teams that I think there's going to be a lot of surprises this year. There's a lot of teams that have been building up towards this season. I feel like you're going to see a lot of teams taking the next step forward, like the Athletics. I think the Pirates are going to be decent this year too, minus today, even though today's still kind of competitive for them. I said the Athletics, I think they have a shot at their division. Even teams, the Giants, I think the Padres can surprise once again in that division. And there's a lot of surprises. I don't think this is the year for the Dodgers. Even though they built it up, I think they have to be disappointed with Freeman and Betts getting older. I'm not feeling it for them this year.
Yeah, no, I think with the Dodgers too, you know, obviously you have the powerhouse and stuff, and so you're expecting the Dodgers to do well every single year, you know, with the current core players they have, right? You know, you can make an argument that the Dodgers have probably 4 or 5 Hall of Famers on their team right now, right? And so in terms of, you know, Freeman, Ohtani, Betts, and there's probably another guy that I'm missing too. But yeah, we just look at the whole like stat padded roster. But you know, after a while, when you have all that, you know, people that just like want the fame, you know, want, you know, everything kind of be like around them and stuff. And so, you know, we saw holes in the Dodgers last year. You know, Mookie Betts didn't really have that good of a playoffs and stuff. And so, you know, when players are getting older, you know, and you know, you kind of bring in other guys like Kyle Tucker and Edwin Diaz, you know, the spotlight can maybe, you know, kind of go off them a little bit. And so, yeah, it'll be interesting to see. But you know, to win a World Series 3 years in a row is very tough. And I think, you know, as you mentioned, there's other teams that are coming up right now, like the Athletics and, you know, a couple other teams in the you know, NL, like the Braves and the Phillies. You know, I think they still have pretty solid teams too. Padres, right? So a lot of teams, you know, treading in the right direction, which, you know, obviously makes the MLB a lot more, you know, competitive and interesting to watch too, right? Especially in a long season, you got 162 games. A lot can change. You know, a lot can go wrong in terms of injuries and, you know, players that are just, you know, getting sent that back down to the minors. And so I think that's what makes baseball really interesting. And so it's really hard to predict. And with the season being so long and so, I guess you could say grueling, obviously, with, you know, only having like 3 or 4 off days per month, right? And so, yeah, I think we can definitely expect a good year. But I think the Dodgers are likely favorites. But again, I wouldn't be surprised if we have, you know, other teams that are in the mix, or maybe if the Dodgers don't have as good of a year as everyone expected, being that they got even better than they were last year.
Yeah, and it's just like, I feel like the NL is uber, uber competitive. Like, you can look at the AL, you can look at like maybe 5 or 6 teams, really, that are just way out of there. They're not going to be competitive. With the NL, there's a lot of teams, in my opinion, that are going to be really competitive. I feel like I spoke to a few already, but I think the Marlins are really going to be good this year.
Yeah.
They have a lot of good young talent that I think have been brewing in that system, and it's finally time for them to show out. They had decent 2024s, especially later on that year. They were fun and exciting. They're in the playoff mix for a little bit there for that wild card spot. I think it's going to be time for the Marlins, especially the NL East. Do the Phillies still have the juice? Do the Braves? I don't think the Braves got the juice anymore, especially with the Profar suspension, all the injuries, Strider's out. So when you look at the NL East, as the weakest has been, if you discount the Mets, and I don't fully trust the Mets still, the Marlins can make a run at the division. The NL Central is wide open. The Brewers got gutted a little bit during the offseason. The Cubs lost Tucker. And you're going to have maybe the Pirates come and take that division. The NL West, you look at the Dodgers as the favorite, but still, can they stay healthy? We don't know how good their farm system is. We don't know. One or two starters goes down. Yes, you still have Ohtani, Glasnow, Snell, Yamamoto. Sasaki has been rough, but he's still there. He still can close games. We saw that in the playoffs. We saw Hader drive to win. So it's going to be difficult still, but I still think there's a lot of talent in the NL. The AL, not as much, but the NL, it's going to be competitive. It's going to be a dogfight, which I'm going to be excited to see.
Yeah, no, same here. It's going to be really good this year. You know, we mentioned that, you know, there's a couple times where, you know, teams kind of lose players. You know, you take the Chicago Cubs, for example, right? You know, they obviously lost Kyle Tucker, right? But then what they do, they bring in Alex Bregman, right? So, you know, we've seen a couple of teams in the offseason, you know, losing those kind of like marquee players. Almost like, you know, the Jays lost Bichette, but, you know, but they bring in the Japanese phenom in Okamoto. And so just when you think teams are kind of, you know, maybe like losing some of their marquee players, they can always find ways to get back. And, you know, it's also really a testament too. Like, you know, the Jays last year, coming off that 2024 year, the year before, right, and, you know, where they really struggled. But what happened last year, you know, they kind of regained their core players, you know, having really good seasons. But for the majority of the part, it was, you know, those guys who had breakout years. You talk about like Ernie Kumlin, like Nathan Lucas, Edison Barger. And that's what really makes baseball interesting is, like, you know, not always those star-studded lineups are always the ones that, you know, that will do the best. You know, talk about the Phillies and stuff. You know, we always think, oh, you know, they got Schwarber and they had Castellanos last year and Harper, right? And they all had that star-studded, like, top five lineup. But, you know, they didn't really, you know, doing as well as maybe people would have thought. And so, yeah, that's really what makes the game really interesting of baseball.
Yeah, exactly. It's always that next man up mentality. It's always who's going to be the star. It could be anyone. Who's going to be a hero? It doesn't have to be your $500 million player. It could be the guy that joined the team from the minors 30 days ago. It's anyone. But, you know, we might, you know, it's going to be a long season. It's going to be an exciting season. I'm an absolute geek for just get some baseball back into me. I'm back to playing in the summer. I'm back to watching tonight. And just before we cut off with the MLB stuff, who's your pick for the World Series? I know it's early. Who do you think is going to be in there?
Well, you know what? I know we were talking about the Dodgers and stuff, but, you know, I'm not going to go with them because, you know, that's kind of the obvious pick. Obviously, you know, the plans to repeat, you know, and trying to eliminate my bias for being a Jays fan as yours. I'm going to go with the Mariners. I think they have a really good rotation. I think arguably one of the best in baseball. I think you're going to see some of their players like Josh Naylor, Julio Rodriguez. You know, they have a lot of other players that can really take the next step up. And, you know, they were that close, right, to like last year in terms of beating the Jays. Obviously, I want the Jays to go to the finals. But I think in terms of the AL, I think the Mariners might pick. They're a really good team. And then when you look at the NL, as you said, it is quite wide open in terms of, you know, in terms of the teams that can you know go far. But call me crazy for this, but I can see the Cubs making a bit of a run this year. You know, I think with Cora Armstrong and Alex Bregman, I know they still have some solid pitching. And the thing about baseball is that you never really know. So I'm gonna go with my prediction. The World Series will be the Cubs and the Mariners this year.
Really, the Cubs and Mariners; those are not teams that are really on my radar right now. For me, it would be the AL. It's gotta be the Astros. I think this is a team that's still really good. It's a team that's been overlooked, and because they were just so injured last year. But yeah, I think they have the best pure hitter in baseball in Yordan Alvarez. They have Altuve, who, granted, is older. His underlying savant numbers aren't that good. But they still have talent. They still have Hader. They still have Hunter Brown. They still have the pitching staff. I could see him going out and making some moves at the deadline. They have Joey Loperfido. He's back. Jay's a legend. I think, and with the Astros, they play against the Mariners in that division. I think the Athletics are going to be good. But I think it's time for them to come back swinging. After especially last year and that embarrassment of missing the playoffs due to just being absolutely decimated by injury, I think that's a team that's depth-wise is good, superstar-wise is good, and overall it's a good team and a good ballpark. And, you know, some people don't love the Astros, especially after 2017. I'm on the Astro train this year. I'm on the Daikin Park train. And coming out of the NL, it's going to be a little bit of a wild-card pick. I talked about them a little bit here. I think it's the Marlins. I think when you look at teams, there hasn't been a Cinderella story of the NL in forever. Like maybe until the Diamondbacks. That was the last time we saw that true Cinderella story. And I think it's time for that. I think the Marlins are that young team that if they get hot at the last time, they're not going to have a lot of wins. They're not going to have a crazy amount. They're going to be a 90-win team. This is your 83, 85-win team in the regular season. Last wild card spot. I think they upset some crazy team in the first round of the playoffs, they go on a run, they get hot, and they make the final, and they make the World Series.
Wow, okay.
Will they win the World Series? You know what? We're 190 games away from the World Series, really. But I have Marlins and Astros. You have Cubs, Mariners. There's completely different opinions on how the MLB season is going to go, but it's going to be an exciting one. I'm really, really excited for this.
Yeah, it sure is, right? You know, and I was a little bit surprised you said the Marlins, but hey, like, you know, it's really all about that team, right? You know, who would have the Jays making the World Series this year, right? After, you know, losing the AL East last year or 2 years ago, sorry, in 2024. And so, yeah, you truly never know. And I mean, again, in terms of, you know, just like sport, it's always nice to see that, you know, underdog and Cinderella story. You know, in terms of the Marlins, who were, yeah, as you said, were in the mix last year, finished the year with, correct me if I'm wrong, I think they were about 500 last year or just over 500.
Just over, yeah.
Yeah. And so, yeah, you know, they're a young team, got a lot of talent. And yeah, I mean, they're not really expected to do it. And so when you have that, those teams who are not expected to make those runs, you know, they're just playing with the young talent. They're just trying to have fun, trying to get better every day. And sometimes that really bodes well. And, you know, you have some of those you know, players from your you know, your minor league team roster that just kind of build things up, and then you kind of build from within, and then, you know, next thing I know, you're, you know, 85 wins in, and you're in the playoffs. And, you know, once you get to the playoffs, you know, upsets happen, players get hot, right? Anything can happen.
Exactly, anything can happen. And then, you know, I'm really excited for it. That's all I really gotta say for the MLB season. And to kind of move away from the infancy of the MLB season to the maturity of the NHL season, it's heating up. The races are getting tight, especially in the East. The West is a little bit of a, yeah, maybe a bit top-heavy, some would say. But the Atlantic Division, if you were to tell me at the start of the year, the Atlantic Division would be Buffalo, Tampa Bay, Montreal, I look at you like you had three heads. And if you told me Buffalo was going to be one of the best teams in the NHL, I think you're crazy. And it's just, that's the way the season's played. You're telling me Florida and Toronto are 7-8 in that division, while Buffalo is at the top of that division, I think you'd be crazy. But that's how the season has played out.
Yeah, no, it's been insane, right? You know, when we look at the Sabres the past couple of years, you know, they haven't made the playoffs, I think, since, what, 2011? And so it's been, you know, crazy. Like, you know, the last time they made the playoffs, they had that era, you know, I think of, like, Jason Pominville and, you know, Ryan Miller and those kind of guys, right? And so, you know, it's been years of frustration for them. You know, tons of head coaching changes, tons of changes to their core. But, you know, we look at the team they have this year, a fairly young team, one of the youngest in the NHL aside from the Habs. And yeah, I mean, like, you know, Tage Thompson just having an unreal year. And I think I've heard some sort of stat, you know, the Sabres have won like 35 of their last like 45 games. Like, they have only lost 10 games since, like, you know, the middle of November. They've been unreal. And yeah, you know, just kind of seeing like, you know, Florida and Toronto, right? You know, those two teams were very, very heavy last year. Obviously, the least, you know, the only really loss I had this year was losing Marner. Florida, you know, obviously losing their captain and Barkov for the year and losing Kachuk for the first half of the year. But, you know, Nathan, maybe this has been, you know, the Leafs and the Panthers weren't as deep as we maybe envisioned them to be, you know?
Yeah, it's just been, for especially for the Panthers, it's just been injuries. They've been beat up. For the Leafs, I feel like it's more of a systemic problem. For the Panthers, they won the two cups. Like, you can look at it as a down year for them. Who cares? They got the hardware for it. For the Leafs, when you don't have the hardware, I think I spoke to this with Tanner last week. I watched a YouTube video about this, and it was titled, How the Leafs Wasted Their Golden Era. And that's right. They had 10 years of opportunities, and it was just missed opportunity after missed opportunity for the Leafs. And I don't want to be rambling about the Maple Leafs because there's so many great teams in the NHL. And they're stuck in this little in-between point where, at this point, we all know Boston's going to get their first-round pick, and it's going to be a top 10. And they're, without the first-round pick, not, it's going to be a high pick. They're going to draft someone massively talented to help them. And now Matthews is getting older. He's getting slower. He's injured now, out for the season. I have no clue where this Leafs team is even going to go. Like, there's no hope. If you told me back in 2016 that the Leafs would have no hope in 10 years and no cups, You'd be crazy.
Exactly, yeah. You know, especially with the era that we had, right? You know, the Leafs kind of struggled for that era for a while. You know, when, you know, Kadri and Riley, like, you know, first broke in the league, you know, back, like, you know, what, 12, 13 years ago or 15 years ago, I guess almost now. You know, they you know, they had something promising. And then, you know, you brought in those young stars with Nylander and Marner, Matthews, you know, signing Tavares. It looked promising, right, for that team. But they just didn't really have that, you know, winning mentality, right? You know, if you look at those Leafs, all those guys had never really had success before, you know, in the playoffs, right? And so, you know, we can harp on the Leafs all we want, but now we look at them now, and, you know, the majority of them are, especially when they're defense, I don't think the Leafs have a defenseman right now that's under the age of 30, right? And so, you know, that's not too promising. You know, they have some hope in terms of, you know, Matthew Nyes and Easton Cowan in terms of their future, but that's about it. Their goaltending has been not the greatest. Defense, again, not really good, and, you know, with Matthews being injured and, you know, not having his best year, the offense has not been great too. So, the direction of this team needs to be really examined, and I think you need a really, really, like, true, deep and experienced hockey mind to lead this team. So maybe that's, you know, moving on from Brad Tree Living, but at least have a lot of work to do in terms of, you know, trying to get themselves out of the slump and, you know, provide the city of Toronto some hope for the future.
Exactly, I've been saying for at least a few months now, Brad Tree Living is done. He has to be done. If he's not done, then someone else has to be done and get rid of Brad Tree Living with them. Because Tree Living and Berube, it's just not worked. Berube was brought in to be, hey, we're going to bring you to the cup. We're going to bring in the tenacity. Get rid of Sheldon Keefe. And it's just not worked. And because his style just does not play well with guys like Matthews, guys like Nylander. You've seen Matthews' scoring just fall off a cliff since Berube's been in town, because the system doesn't allow for Matthews to play his natural game. And grant, you could say Marner being gone, but still, Matthews is supposed to be this generational goal scorer. He's not scoring goals, and it's definitely a systemic issue. But to kind of, you know, look away from the Leafs, like, it's not a good team. We know that for a fact, at least for this year. And I'm hoping they stay in the basement for a little while. I think they've had their fair share of 100-point seasons and whatnot. But a team I kind of want to talk about is the Senators. The only reason I kind of want to talk about them, because I'm heading up to Ottawa to watch one of their games in a few weeks. Just again, they're really right in the mix, and it's a team where I just have no feel on. I'm being so honest, I have no feel on the Senators. You have great players. You have Brady Tkachuk. You have supposedly what was one of the best goaltenders in the league about 2-3 years ago, Linus Ullmark. And they're sitting right now in that playoff wild card race because the Eastern Conference, especially the Atlantic, uber competitive. Absolutely uber competitive. Like, you have so many teams sitting within that 2-3 point range within each other. And I think the Senators can get in, but they have a tough schedule coming down. When I go up there to go watch them, they're playing the Wild. And right after, before that, they're playing the Sabres. So that's an atrocious weekend for a team that's wanting to make the playoffs. But someone's got to dig deep. You have a known winner in Brady Tkachuk on that team. Can he will his boys as a captain to help? I want to see the Senators in the playoffs again. Buffalo and Ottawa in the playoffs at the same time, you sign me up. That's two teams I kind of want to see. They're young, they're exciting, especially mix them in with the Canadians. It's going to be exciting playoffs, and I hope the Senators do make it, actually.
Yeah, for sure. You know, we saw the Senators, you know, they've kind of been, you know, in that rebuilding phase. But, you know, obviously for the past couple of years now, that, you know, Tkachuk, Batherson, Stutzla, you know, they've, you know, been in the NHL now for a few years. And so, you know, we thought the Senators would kind of take that next leap. And, you know, they definitely are. But, you know, it's weird because, you know, obviously they've been hot since the Olympics, but kind of going in, they were, you know, unsure. They were still, like, you know, losing some games. And, you know, as a result of the trade deadline, they didn't do a ton of stuff. You know, they got Warren Fogle, they got rid of David Perron, so they made it a little bit, but nothing too crazy, you know, to shake up the team too much. So it sounds like, you know, they're going to try and win within, you know, which has proven to work before. But, you know, I think it's going to be really exciting this year. We kind of, it's a bit of a turn of a phase, right? You know, with the Leafs, the Panthers not being in the playoffs this year, Rangers, you know, they've been in the playoffs for the majority of the past, you know, decade and stuff. They're not going to be in it this year. So we look at, you know, the Canadiens or the Senators and the Sabres being in the playoffs this year. It's going to be fun. A lot of young teams, a lot of young talent, very, 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 like, fast team, special teams too, right? We look at the Habs and Sabres power play, especially, just lethal, right? And so, yeah. But then, you know, when you look at, you know, the teams from, like, teams 4 through 9 or 10, I'm not sure if you have the standings up right now, but they're literally separated about, like, what, 2-3 points from teams 4 to 9?
Exactly. It's so competitive. It's so competitive, especially, like, I saw a stat, like, the Maple Leafs would be in a playoff race in the Western Conference. They'd be, I think, fourth in the Pacific Division, which is, it's atrocious, especially as a Sharks fan. Like, you got to kind of capitalize on when you get divisions like this. But it kind of speaks to a testament of, like, the competence in the Eastern Conference and how good they are, because they are just taking points out of each other. If it was, like, one bad weekend, and your playoff hopes are dead. And that's what it's come down to. It's really exciting. Way more exciting than the West. We can go out West, talk about it a little bit, because Colorado is just leaps and bounds away from everyone else, in my opinion, for when it comes to Stanley Cup chances. 104 points, 47, 13, and 10. You think, when are they going to slow down? They just haven't slowed down all season. And if they continue that into the playoffs, I don't think they lose many games. And I think they go in and win easily in the playoffs.
We look at the Avalanche, right? You know, they have a pretty much a good mix of everything, right? You know, kind of looking into the season starting out, I think, you know, a lot of people were kind of unsure about their goaltending duo, you know, with Wedgwood and Blackwood. You know, they've been proven in themselves past, but there was no really clear-cut number one starter. And then, you know, both those goalies, you know, kind of a 1A, 1B situation this year, and they've just been playing great. They've been, you know, the best goalie tending in the league this year. McKinnon's had an unreal year, leading the league in goals. And, you know, they've had some good veteran players, too, that have been there for them. Like, Brock Nelson's had a really good year, too. Everything, like, Natchez, Luckinen. And so, I mean, sure, yeah, they definitely made some other you know, key depth acquisitions at the deadline. But, yeah, I don't see a world where, you know, Avalanche, you know, gets knocked out before, you know, the Western Conference Finals or even the Finals with the way that they're running right now. You know, this has been one of the best, if not the best teams that we've seen in a while. Maybe, you know, aside from the 18-19 Lightning during the season, but... Yeah, they've been unreal, and it just seems like it's almost unfair for them, right? You know, we look at the teams that are below them, and very very top heavy. You know, we kind of have the Stars in the Wild that are there too, but, you know, Nathan, this kind of brings me into the point that, you know, people have been talking about it, but do we kind of go back to that, you know, 1-16 format for the playoffs? Because, you know, some of these teams in the East, you know, teams, you know, 9 through 11 who would be in the playoffs if they're in the Western Conference, are kind of, you know, some people might say be getting, you know, kind of screwed out of a playoff spot.
I don't know about 1-16. I think there's conferences for a reason. I think it changes year by year, really. Like, some years, the bottom, the West is way more competitive than the East. I remember back in, you know, the mid-2010s, the Cup basically ran through the West. And within the Kings and the Blackhawks, exactly. You know, and we'll always change tides. Well, the big conversation I've heard, that kind of, you know, it's kind of grown on me. Before, you could have told me, hey, 1-8. I was like, I'm not too hot on 1-8. And now 1-8 now, I kind of see the beneficiaries of it. Because is it fair? You know, hockey isn't always fair, but this is kind of atrocious. Why should the Stars and Wild, which are basically, it's collision course, they're going to end up playing each other in the first round. Why should that be a first round matchup? And then you get Oilers, Golden Knights as a first round matchup. Those two teams are mid. They're beyond mid. And that's going to end up being a first round matchup. And it's just unfortunate because the Wild and Stars, that could be a Western Conference final. Easily.
Yeah, it should be, probably.
Easily. Mm. Easily should be a Western Conference final. And they're going to end up playing each other in a 2v3. So, not necessarily 1 through 16, because that'd be horrid travel for the first round.
True. Yeah.
1-8, I could definitely see happening in the future because it's kind of bad. Especially, it gets repetitive, too. because, like, the Kings are a few points back of the Golden Knights, and I do not want to watch another Oilers-Kings series.
4 years in a row, 5 years in a row.
That's a bit much. Like, give me a little bit of, you know, diversity. Why can't I watch a little bit of, you know, Central versus Pacific, maybe some Atlantic versus Metropolitan, exactly. In the first round, like, you don't get that outside the wild card, and even the wild card can end up being division on division. Like, give me the 1-8. Like, you know, make people say, oh, protect the divisions. If you win your division, you're still going to get at that top two spot. And even you go the 3-8, it's going to be competitive still. I understand for competitiveness in the first round, yes, it's great for TV. 2v3 is better than for TV than 2v7. But once again, like, the Stars and Wild should not be playing each other in the first round. That's a travesty. The Canadiens and Tampa Bay Lightning should not be playing each other in the first round. That's also a travesty. And it gets to a point where, like, yeah, you get really competitive first rounds. But then, like, rounds 2 and 3, you're like, especially round 2. Round 2 has been so lackluster. I feel like that's the most lackluster round, I find. Because you have round 1. These are teams that are so evenly matched. And then you have, you know, a team that's beating out easily in the second round. Like, it's where every year second round, you just have all the sweeps that happen.
Yeah. Yeah, no, and we've been seeing that too much, right? No, I think that's something to consider too, because obviously, you know, you wanted to, you know, have a reward, right, for those teams that are, you know, finishing 1 or 2, right? Because, you know, you're going to see in the conference right now, I think, you know, the Lightning, I think, want to say they're second or third, right? So, you know, you want to reward them hopefully with, you know, playing that, you know, that, you know, 7 or 8 team in the conference, right? And so, but now it's not, you're going to be playing the Habs. And so same thing with the Stars in the Wild. Like, both those teams, I think you want to have a reward for, you know, finishing high in the standings, you know, and that you know, ideally, and quote unquote, you have that advantage of winning first round. Obviously, I get it. Like, you don't want to see all those sweeps and stuff. But realistically, like, you don't see that many sweeps aside from, you know, the 1v8 matchup once in a while. But, you know, that 3v6 matchup, that 4v5 matchup, and even the 2v7, you know, it's interesting in hockey. Hockey playoffs are hard to predict. We see upsets every single year and every single round. And so, yeah, I think that's something that can be addressed. And it's been talked about for a while too, right? But we have kind of seen no kind of change about that, you know, in the past couple of years. So I think to kind of balance all those rounds and, you know, to have some, you know, second round matchups actually go into to game 7, you know, could be, you know, lead to some more, you know, entertainment and more, you know, storylines.
Yeah, exactly. Like, a team, once again, we keep talking about Stars Wild because I think that's just absolute travesty that has to happen. That it feels like you're getting punished. You punish teams that are really, really good. But they have the punishment of having to play, you know, like, a generationally good team, like the Avalanche. Like, it's not their fault they have to play in the same division, one of the best teams of the 2020s.
Yeah.
And you're just, and now you have to go play against the Wild. That just doesn't affect your chances to make it out of the first round. That's going to wear down your team for rounds 2 and 3, because Stars-Avalanche, that's the second round matchup that if the two teams win. Because now you're setting up, I think, the three best teams are on one side of the bracket. That just lets for the Oilers to get through to the Stanley Cup final, right, again. Because, yeah, it's unbalanced brackets because you're putting so much. Because especially, like, you don't usually see divisions this unstacked. Like, this big of a discrepancy within a conference. The Central, top-heavy for what it is, it's loaded. It's loaded. The three best teams in the West are in the Central. And now you got to load them up on one side of the bracket with whatever unfortunate wild card's going to be put up there. And then you get to put the Ducks, Oilers, Vegas with a garbage wild card team. Like, who wants to watch? I understand the Ducks are exciting. The Oilers are exciting, but I would be damned if I have to watch the Golden Knights or Kings play any more hockey beyond the first round.
Yeah, I know. Especially, you know, with the Golden Knights and the Kings being kind of those aging teams, right? And, you know, I think I saw a stat, like, almost all the Eastern Conference teams right now will lead the Pacific Division. I think maybe aside from the 7 or 8 team, the first, I want to say, like, almost everyone, you know, and that just kind of goes to show, right, that, you know, it's just, you know, between all the divisions, Eastern and Western Conference, we see the East is a little bit more quite a lot more balanced, right? You know, sure, you have those top teams in the Eastern Conference that, you know, for sure are going to be making the playoffs, but, you know, right now, we look at, you know, teams 4 through 10, and no one is guaranteed to really make, or, like, no one is really highly favored to, you know, make the playoffs because it's all so close. Whereas, you know, in the West, right, you could have teams right now, like, as you said, like the Leafs and the Panthers and the Flyers, you know, those teams that are outside looking in right now, they would, you know, either be in a wild card spot or right there. And so, I get it. you gotta have conferences for a reason for travel, but it's something to look at and stuff, you know, in terms of for a fairness perspective, because having teams make a playoff spot when they are, you know, 7 or 8 points less than a team that, you know, didn't make a playoff spot, you gotta kind of question, you know, is the whole system, you know, doing justice, and is it being fair?
Yeah, exactly. Like you brought up that stat with how many teams leading the Pacific. It's 10. Everyone up to Detroit, and Detroit's not in a playoff spot within the division and within the conference especially. And it's kind of a travesty, really. Like, yes, it's really down year, but the Pacific's been down for a few years now. And granted, yes, there's a lot of young talent within the Pacific, but it's brutal. It's brutal to have to watch teams like, you know, the Maple Leafs aren't good. They would be atrocious to watch in the playoffs, but still, they would be in a playoff spot. Granted, would they get absolutely walked out by Colorado in the first round? Yes. Yes, they would. But they wouldn't be in a tanking position like they are right now. So it's a little bit something to look at. If you're Gary Bettman, I would definitely look at it. But once again, first round TV matchups, you have that super underdog. You can market around that. Within the 1v8 system, there's never really that super, super underdog. Yeah, you have 8 seeds. But, you know, someone like Nashville, they sneak in, or the Utah Mammoth. That's going to be a little more marketable for them, especially if they play Colorado and they do have that upset. I understand from a marketing standpoint. You know, this is a business school, but anyways, got to look at those perspectives.
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah, I'm going to be excited for the NHL. That's winding out to about 10 games left. I'm really excited for the playoffs. I truly am. MLB season kicking off. NHL getting to playoffs, sign me up.
It's gonna be good. Yeah, it's gonna be good. You know, we talk about NHL like really wanting down here, and it's gonna come down to the last day. You know, especially for the Eastern Conference for sure. Hard to say about the West, but we're gonna have. I'm gonna say multiple teams. You know, last game or two of the season. It's gonna take a lot of those teams. We're, you know, we'll see. You know, the Sabres and the Hurricanes clinch probably in the next, you know, 3 or 4 games, but. For everyone else in the Eastern Conference, teams, you know, 3 through 11, right? It's going to be, you know, a bit of a dogfight to kind of get that in. But kind of going back to your point there, Nathan, you know, when we look at, you know, the 1v8 matchup, especially right now in the Eastern Conference, right? I think right now it would be like Buffalo and Ottawa, right? If it were to be 1v8.
1v8, I'll actually check that for you right now.
Okay, yeah.
I know Ottawa's 8, but I think the 1 is Carolina.
Is it Carolina? Yeah. So Carolina, Ottawa, right? I mean, like, I don't know if you can say that's like, you know, sure, Carolina's probably going to be the favorites in that series, but because Ottawa's been playing so well of late, and, you know, they took the Leafs team last year, you know, and arguably the Leafs team last year, people said, was one of the best that they've had in the decade. And, you know, they made quite a good series. And so I think, you know, having the underdog story is really good. Then that way you're kind of building up the attention, right? You know, first round matchup, underdog story, second round gets a little closer and stuff. And then, you know, as you kind of work up, you know, into the rounds, and, you know, teams kind of weighing out, then you have the best talented teams playing each other, you know, as rounds 2, 3, and 4 progress.
Yeah, I'm just looking at the 1 through 8s right now. Like, I have in front of me, this would be an incredible playoffs. This would just be genuinely an incredible playoffs. You get Boston, Montreal in the first round. Like, looking at the West isn't that good. We'll go back to the East. Like, you get Buffalo, Pittsburgh. I love to watch a Buffalo Pittsburgh series. Yeah. You'd get Tampa, Columbus. A little flashback from, I don't know how many years ago, 6 now?
Yeah, I think.
Columbus is sneakily good this year. Like, they're sneakily, sneakily good this year. I think if you're looking at a team that dark horse, it's Columbus.
Yeah.
It's got to be Columbus. And I'm so excited for these playoffs. I'm just looking at the old teams one more time. It's so compact. Who's going to be in? Who's going to be out? Like, I think everyone up to the Capitals has a shot.
Yeah, pretty
much. Making the playoffs. And if that's going to come down to the last, like, we're going to get playoff style hockey within 2 weeks, because it's just me ramping all the way up.
Yeah, you know, and for myself as a Canadiens fan, you know, getting a lot of hate about that, you know, around in the Waterloo Toronto area. But, you know, in the atmosphere that I've been watching the last few Habs games, and, you know, it's felt like, you know, important, meaningful games, like pretty much like playoff games, right? You know, tonight the Habs are playing the Blue Jackets, right? A very important game. You know, those teams separate with only 1 point. You know, the Habs 88 points and the Blue Jackets, I believe, 87. So just a lot of meaningful games down the stretch. They're going to feel like playoffs, and it's just going to be a really big tune-up for the playoffs. And so some might argue even a bit of a extension of the playoffs, you know, kind of a playoffs preview or playoffs come early. And so, like we said, you know, as a one season's kind of winding down, getting in the playoffs and the swing of things. We know you have the MLB kind of starting up, so, you know, a bit of a overlap time of year, but which makes it great, because, you know, there's sports galore on all the time, right? You know, you got the NBA, NHL, MLB, everything's kind of, you know, in full flight now.
Exactly, and just before we finish up, you know, we did it for the MLB World Series pick. That might be a bit of a long shot, but even for the NHL, here we go. Who do you have out of the East? Who do you have out of the West to make the Stanley Cup?
Well, you know, I think we know in the West, it's, you know, it's definitely more, you know, you have those kind of top heavy teams. In the East, it's a little more open. But man, I like these Buffalo Sabres have been red hot, right? I mean, they have been, I would like to think probably one of the best records in the NHL, since whenever, but like in the last like 45 games, probably only Colorado has either matched them or better than them. Right. So, you know, the fact that they've been playing this good hockey, they just seem like they're unstoppable. They have tons of scores. They have size, they have youth, physicality. They don't really seem to have any weak spots in their team right now. Even their goaltending, which is, you know, it's been quite solid too. You know, no like marquee names, but you know, Ukko Pekkalukin has been making a name for himself this year. So I have the Sabres in the East, and in the West, I can't count out the Avalanche, right? The Avalanche have been, you know, dominant this whole year, and yeah, I mean, Nate MacKinnon has looked like, you know, one of the better players in the league this year, if not the best. Obviously, you know, you have McDavid, but the way that MacKinnon's been playing this year has been insane. So I'm gonna go with Buffalo and Colorado in the finals.
You have Buffalo, Colorado. We got something similar, but you know, I know you couldn't say Montreal. I know you're a big Canadiens guy, but I just like the Canadiens this year. They feel like the team. I think Buffalo got hot too early. I don't think they can sustain this for how much longer. But Montreal, to me, it feels like it's time. They made the cup, I believe it was 2021, and that was a bit of a, you know, COVID year, whatnot. They're always going to put an asterisk on that. But I feel like this is finally the year where they're finally all connecting. Is there goaltending problems in Montreal? Yes, there is goaltending problems in Montreal. But do you have a guy like Cole Caulfield that's a 50-goal scorer? Yes, you do. They're exciting. They're young. I feel like they've slightly flown under the radar now that you have Buffalo in that division and you have Tampa and Nikita Kucherov in that division. They've slightly flown under the radar. I think they come out and they can maybe go to the Cup. For the West, I think it's really only three teams. And I think the team I'd choose, it's not going to be Colorado. I think it's going to be Dallas. Dallas is a team you have great players all around. Robertson. You have great goaltending in Ottinger. You have Mikko Rantanen, and that's your former Colorado Avalanche. Guy's just been a ghost for them. He's been the boogeyman for Colorado. And if they match up, I don't know. That's your round two matchup, I feel. And if Rantanen matches up against the Colorado Avalanche, I don't think the Avalanche can beat Mikko Rantanen. And I think the goaltending matchup, I don't know how much I trust Black and Wedgewood. So I think it's going to be Dallas, and I think it's going to be Montreal, and that's going to be a super exciting series to watch. And I don't think any series we get in the Cup final, any series in the playoffs is going to be super exciting to watch.
Totally. Yeah, no, I think that's good. And thank you for telling me that. It gives me more hope that you think the Habs are going to do well this year. But yeah, no, we'll see. It's going to be definitely open and stuff, especially in the East. But yeah, I truly can't see anyone making it out of the West aside from those top three teams. But I think especially Colorado and Dallas are definitely your top three teams. They're just very, very star heavy, have played really well the whole year. And, you know, obviously Minnesota's got a shot. But other than those three teams, I mean, sure, some might say maybe the Oilers, maybe the Golden Knights, they've had success in the past. But I mean, they have been really up and down this year, and you know, haven't been getting full contributions from all the players like they have been in past years. But yeah, no, definitely exciting times ahead in the next couple of weeks, and I know the playoffs are going to be right around the corner, starting I think around the third week of April.
Should be the third week of April, and I'm so excited. Anything could happen. We made our picks; those picks could be totally wrong in like 3 weeks. So, but I think that's going to do it for us. Oh, and you're a fourth year, right? You're graduating.
Yes, that's right.
This is probably your last episode of Golden Bull, might be.
Yeah, possibly, yeah.
It's been a pleasure. It's been a pleasure working with you this year. It's been a pleasure working with you in Radio Laurier. It's been great work from you. It's been such an incredible effort. I don't know. I'm in a first year. We've only known each other for a year, but it's been a pleasure knowing you. Pleasure having you on Golden Bull this year.
Yeah, thank you, Nate. It's been fun. You know, obviously, I didn't really have the chance to do this in my first couple of years, which, you know, I would have liked to. But, yeah, no, shout out to my good friend Mateo for kind of putting me on this. And, you know, it's been good to do this. You know, even though I'm in fourth year, you know, I got Nate here as my first year manager, but it's been a fun time, and I'm happy to kind of, you know, become more involved with the Laurier Athletics, and, you know, get to know their players as well, and just understand kind of the whole OUA, and, you know, hopefully provide some knowledge that I've got from earlier. So thank you again.
Yeah, you've been incredible all year, man. You've been doing some great work for us, coming in clutch, especially every time I need someone to pick up a game last second notice. You've been doing it for us. So you've been doing great work. Thank you, Owen.
Yeah, we appreciate it.
So that's going to do it for us for this March 26th episode of Golden Bold. I'm in your host, Nathan Pagliaroli, alongside Owen McDonald, and that will do it for us. Thank you.